Just, I think the internet revolution's gonna have to go on without me.
Oh no!
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 10, Episode 22, The Easter Bunny. Guys, have you heard the good news?
He is risen.
And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Budding.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
I mentioned this in our last episode on Melrose Place, but we should mention it again. Although we say it in the outro every time, we do have a Patreon. You can find it at patreon.com/againwiththis. And the way it works, if you're not familiar, is you can pledge us a little money, whatever you're comfortable with, every month. And if we get to a certain threshold, we will create a new additional episode just for Patreons every month. And as of this recording, we are $63 of pledges worth away from reaching our first milestone. So if you go to patreon.com/againwiththis and pledge, we are grateful for every cent and we are eager to make more episodes for you. So help us get there and we will do that.
My butt.
Indeed.
What was that?
My butt.
Yep. My butt.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Speaking of, oh, no, this D plot. Oh, my God. Steve and Janet's latest comedy plot involves a pet getting killed.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. Okay. Steve and Janet meet their new neighbors, the Gundersons, who have a kid and a bunny. The Doberman that Steve is holding by a leash barks at the bunny. There's a gif in the visual aids of the dog and the bunny eyeing each other that was very funny to me. Steve tells the dog to shut up. Her name is Georgia. They're dog sitting for Janet's parents. The neighbors are snooty, preppy types. And when Steve mentions they're in journalism, they assume he's at the Chronicle. The wife asks what Steve is working on. And without missing a beat, he says, celebrity nose jobs. Sheepishly, Janet tells them where they work, and given that the Gunderson's kid's name is Otto and they are extremely Aryan, I do hate them immediately, but that does not excuse what's coming up.
No.
Later, Steve explains that he wants to kiss up to the Gundersons. The husband's name is Booth, by the way, in case you still weren't sure how you were supposed to feel about him. Because the Gunderson's kid goes to a school that they might want to get Maddie into eventually. No matter what happens, they have to stay on his good side. Cut to Georgia at the back door with a dead rabbit in her mouth. They both assume that Georgia has killed the neighbor's rabbit as well as Maddie's chances of getting into a good school. Also, a pet is dead. Like, the hijinks kick in so fast. Like, a rabbit is dead.
Yeah.
This is not funny. Anyway,
no.
When we check back in, they're arguing over whether they should tell the Gundersons what happened. Steve pretends he wants to spare the kids because it's about being child-centered, but then suggests just throwing the rabbit corpse into the yard of a neighbor that has a Rottweiler. Janet also defends Georgia since she picked her out of the pet store and her parents have had her since she was 15. And this gives Steve an idea, which is to get a replacement bunny, though he couldn't find one with the same black markings and is trying to figure out how to color the new rabbit's fur with like shoe polish and dye and stuff. By night.
Also not okay.
No. By night. Yeah,
there's
Steve
like a can of spray paint on the table in one scene.
Yeah.
This is not cute.
Mm-mm. So by night, Steve and Janet sneak the money into the Gunderson yard. Steve is turned on by Janet's skill at crime, which is the only part of this that I thought was even a little bit cute. But anyway, they make so much noise doing all of this, but the Gundersons don't hear them. We see a shot of them drinking white wine as they shit talk Maddie as slow relative to their own kids, which they chalk up to the inferiority of her parents' intellects. So again, we hate the Gundersons. Got it. So then, at the end of the storyline, Steve and Janet walk over with Maddie to an Easter party at the Gundersons. Janet makes Steve agree to tell them the truth, but then they hear kids gasping. Fluffy seems totally fine now, despite having died on Friday. Turns out Georgia didn't kill Fluffy. She just dug her up from where they buried her. Wah, wah. She's risen from the dead and on Easter. Sounds like a lead story for the beat, says Steve. was this funny? This is terrible.
It's really, and I resent dogs getting dragged into this.
Yeah. This poor dog.
Georgia is very pretty.
She is. She was in a previous episode, right?
I think so.
Janet brought her to the office to like test Steve to see if he was worthy or something.
And she like treed him on a desk.
Maybe.
Good girl.
We do have more to discuss, but first we have a birthday message for Andrea Kaplan.
Andrea teaches 8th grade special education in Ypsilanti Township, Michigan. Awesome. And is, we are told, quote, a fanatic about anything and everything Dylan and Brenda. Brenda losing her virginity to Dylan in season one wasn't just Andrea's favorite episode. It was one of the greatest moments of Andrea's life, end quote.
Love it. Also awesome, in our opinion. In honor of Andrea's birthday and her correct allegiance to the one true Zip ship, we're going to correct 5 aspects of the Brenda Dylan arc we think the show screwed up.
Number one, we know Andrea loves the spring dance episode, and so do we, but shouldn't a single hair have been put out of place by Brenda and Dylan's first time encounter? It's not like they did it standing up. Come on.
Number two, understanding that in the early 90s, the TV show couldn't really portray a teen girl becoming sexually active without a lot of mortality angst. Their early second season, Brenda needs time to process her orgasm break, was, and remains, bullshit.
Number three, we're also not really believing that Dylan would turn his back on Brenda's perfect hair, or Jim's father figuring for that matter, for anyone, much less for Kelly, because...
Number four, the show's heroic attempts to retcon Kelly as Dylan's soulmate would have worked a lot better if Kelly and Dylan didn't obviously hate each other.
And number five, last but not least, Brenda is Dylan's soulmate. It's why he went to London to shack up with her, and the writers may have done everything in their extremely limited power to try to undo that off-screen reunion, but they were right the first time, and we will not forget.
Andrea's husband, Michael, and son, Cameron, hopes she will never forget this birthday message. So from them, and all of us here at Again With This,
Happy birthday, Andrea! Managed not to call her Andrea one time. I really thought I was going to do that.
Good for us. Oh, we should have checked if that's how she pronounced her name. Sorry if it is. Moving on. To our C-plot, Noah's attempts to help Ellen get her life together are not appreciated.
No, they're not.
This is very bad. He goes looking for Ellen in his room, but the bed is made. She's not there. He finds Ellen crying on the bathroom floor, nervous about her first day at the job he got her. She's also suspicious about Noah's motives for helping her and says that his wanting to help her puts pressure on her in that she doesn't want to let him down. He reassures her and says he'll drive her there, not only to make sure she doesn't veer into the nearest bar, but so he can tell her how special she is. There is also a forehead kiss, because of course there is.
Of course there is.
Several days later, Ellen lurches into the club, clearly drunk and pouting about all the orders she screwed up. She wasn't ready for this, and she told Noah that, but he thought he knew better. He tries to get her out of the bar, but she says she's already gone, and Donna watches them go and is sad for some reason. Noah brings Ellen coffee, and before she's even totally awake, he tells her he talked to Ben, her boss, who said mix-ups happen all the time. He also said he also told Ben that Ellen would be in late. Ben was fine with it. Buddy, you are not her agent. This is not a props.
No.
Like, it's one thing to get her the job, but then, like, back away. That's the end of your responsibility here.
Well, she just seems completely unequipped to handle any... setback, so
yeah,
maybe stop helping.
Yeah, well, she tries to tell him that she just cannot handle pressure, and he's like, well, neither of us can, that's why we drank, but now we can help each other. And she repeats she doesn't want his help. He assumes that she's upset about drinking the night before and says backslides happen all the time, and he'll call Ben again and says she needs one more day. Dude, no. And she then flips out at his inability to listen to her, and so do I. Like, I mean, the idea that we care about Noah at all at this point is kind of preposterous. Like, once he broke up with Donna, they really just should have written him out of the show. Like, he's from here on out is pretty much marooned in this storyline, like, until the finale. Like, who cares?
Yeah. And, like, the number of ways in which the show acts like it's setting things up for a season 11 when it must have known by this point that that was not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tiring.
Yeah. Anyway, this goes on. He keeps trying to help her and she keeps trying to communicate to him. He's not helping. He is controlling. But later that evening, Donna finds Noah at the Peach Pit. When he started drinking again, he thought it was her fault because she was supposed to save him, which, like, again, when did he ever stop before this time is what I would like to know.
Exactly what my notes said.
Whatever. He realized he had to save himself, and he hopes Ellen realizes the same thing about herself. And Donna says he did all he could for Ellen, and she has to do the rest for herself. But when he asks, what if she can't? Donna doesn't have an answer. No one cares.
Nope.
No one cares.
Even Ellen's like, stop caring about this, please. And he's like, no. Like, God.
On to the B plot. Matt's dirt biker boning guilt is ruining his life. In bed at her place, Kelly tells Matt she thinks she knows why he's been so distant lately. He, of course, thinks that she has guessed about his cheating, but in a classic TV moment, she is the one who's guilty about his car. While he was away, she borrowed it and sideswiped a parked car. Why in the world would she go all the way to the Walsh house to borrow Matt's car when she has a car? Whatever.
And why is she acting like a cutesy 14-year-old about doing this? It's just nonstop baby voice, and it's horrible.
Yeah, it is. Whatever, there's a dent. She got a damage estimate because she knows he's broke AF. But once he determines that she's okay, he doesn't care about the car. She is relieved and kisses on him for being so smart and kind and understanding. But clip two.
If you didn't know about your car, then why have you been acting so weird lately?
You know, work, money, the usual crunch.
Everything is gonna be okay.
Yeah, I hope so.
It is. I promise.
Kelly, I should probably tell you that.
There's so few left, Sarah.
I know. I mean, and once again, there's my old non-favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, I should tell you this thing. Nah.
Oh.
Not how people act.
Not for the last time in this episode either.
Not in
the storyline. So at the Peach Pit, Kelly announces to Matt that she wants to start planning their wedding. Remember that? His chill reaction to her car accident reminded her how lucky she is to have him, and she wants to get married before he realizes he could do better than her. Haha.
Yeah, not a joke.
She describes him as a handsome attorney who's not a dog, and he looks away in shame. Then Dylan walks in and tries to bait Matt in clip three.
We were just talking about where we're going to get married. I think it should be in a church.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely in a church. I mean, they got all that religious stuff, and there's a confessional halfway down the aisle. It's a good idea.
Dick.
I mean, that's kind of funny, but also, like, Kelly's not
Catholic.
I mean,
yeah, it is, but it's like, what is his play here? I mean, well, there's more examples later, and we can get into it, but it's just really, like, it's weird.
Yeah.
The writing here is weird. Like, how do they want him to be?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Matt gives this a threatening eyebrow, which you can see in the visual aids. Kelly notices Matt's jaw tension, but doesn't say anything. So then later, Dylan finds Matt drinking water while moping at the closed club. He leads off with an accusation in clip four.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Relatable.
I mean, you are, but at the same time, he speaks for us.
He
You're
does.
Enjoying this, aren't you? No, we're not.
So Matt believes Kelly will leave him if she finds out he slept with someone else. Dylan doesn't think so, but admits he doesn't know that for sure. Matt wants to know what would Dylan do. Matt's not Dylan, Dylan says. Matt guesses that Dylan wouldn't tell Kelly, and Dylan confirms that he never would. I bet he would. Hard to say. Kelly and Matt depart a church tour and debate whether it's impersonal to get married by someone neither of them knows. Kelly suggests a judge Matt clerked for who could perform the vows whenever they have the ceremony. Matt says the judge is busy and doesn't want to inconvenience him, and Kelly gets testy as Matt shuts down in clip five.
I know you have a lot on your mind, but planning our wedding should be a joy, and if your work or whatever it is that's making you so distant...
My work. It's my work.
If it's keeping you from enjoying this, then you need to deal with it.
First of all, shut up, Kelly. Second of all, here's what's keeping him from enjoying wedding planning. Wedding planning. It sucks. It sucks.
It does. Yeah, it's not fun.
No, it's not. I mean, like, I didn't hate it. It wasn't a total horror, but we also got married in the backyard. So, you know, and Matt, Jesus, like, you're a lawyer. Figure out some plausible deniability way to cover for your bad mood / guilty eyebrows and just go back to that. Or how about this? Agree to call the judge and see if he's free and then just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
It's not like she's going to run into him.
No.
So then Kelly wakes Dylan up in the middle of the night. She wants to keep her private life private. But did anything happen when Dylan and Matt went away? Dylan dodges but says no, nothing happened. Kelly thinks he answered too quickly, but that's because nothing happened. Dylan is blearily sarcastic about Kelly going back to Matt, the one she's going to be disgustingly happy with, and she does not read into this and just leaves. But then Dylan finds Matt at the Java bar the next day to warn him that Kelly can tell something's up with him, although even when she asked, he didn't say anything. Matt realizes he has to tell Kelly what happened. Dylan agrees that he does. And then they start arguing about who is and is not constitutionally capable of cheating on a broad and getting away with it in clip six.
What are you talking about? You're the one who told me not to tell her.
Yeah, that's before I knew you'd walk around looking like a war criminal.
Yeah, well, I feel guilty, all right? I can't help that.
Feeling guilty is one thing. Looking guilty is something entirely different. Now, if Kelly sees you sweating it, she's going to figure it out. That's the only thing worse than you telling her. Don't let that happen.
I mean, here's the thing. Cheating is wrong, duh. But either you feel so bad about it that you can't go on with this relationship because it's going to be hanging over you, or else you decide it's not going to benefit either one of you to tell her about this thing that you did that's probably never, ever going to happen again because you're never going to be on spiked LSD punch, and just go on with your life and stop thinking about it.
Yeah. I also don't really understand what the writers are trying to do with Dylan here.
Yeah.
Like, he seems totally put upon that he's in the middle, which is like, I understand that if he wanted to stay out of it, now he can't because Kelly showed up at his door, but also use the peephole and don't fucking let her in.
Right.
If you want to stay out of it, stay out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to stay out of it, tell Kelly yourself. But
yeah.
His whole, like, I'm tired of being the worldly one who tells everybody else how to handle their own bad behavior. Like, shut the fuck up. Also, get a haircut. And hey, sad piano, we get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would almost buy it more if, like, his master plan was to tell Matt not to tell her, knowing that Matt would not be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
But basically, I mean,
I don't think that is the master plan.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
But I mean, spoiler, because I had to write up the series finale for the book. Like, he ends, if that were the case, Dylan would be right. Because Matt's not a good liar, despite being a lawyer. Matt hesitates knocking on Kelly's door sometime later, but she comes out having seen him in the window. Hey, turns out there were a couple of things about that trip to the desert that he didn't tell her about, like he drank some punch at a rave that had LSD in it. But when she asks for clarification, he denied that he dropped acid and repeats that he drank punch that was spiked with acid. Like, we get it, counselor. But she's like, fine, you said you had a couple of things to tell me. What else? But he's like, nope, that was it. She clearly doesn't believe him, but he claims the reason he's been so weird since he got back is that he was uncomfortable about keeping the secret from her. And now he's definitely going to be fine. She does not believe he has told her the whole truth, and he gets all defensive, like, you're clearly proving her right. You are so bad at this.
Yeah.
God.
Also, maybe now's the time to tell her that you didn't come clean about anything that happened on the trip because you knew she'd be a bitch about it, because she always is. And that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And don't get married.
Yeah. You hate each other.
Yeah. So the next day, Dylan goes by Matt's office saying that if this internet thing takes off, and we will get to it, he will need a good lawyer. Hey, maybe Dylan, who can afford it, should hire a lawyer for rich people and not this fucking chump.
Yeah, anyway, seriously.
The scene is actually about Matt pouting in clip 7.
Tell me, when Kelly and I break up, will there be a grace period, or will you offer the Caribbean vacation right away?
I don't want that to happen.
Because we're pals.
No, not because we're pals. Because I don't want to see her get hurt. She's yours to lose. And if you do, you got no one to blame but yourself.
The one time that's actually true.
Yeah, that he was given drugs without his consent. But why get into that?
Right.
It's not an area the show likes to contemplate. So
it's really not. Anyway, then Kelly, at the end of the episode, goes to the Walsh house to see Matt. Matt is glad she did because he has to do that thing that you hate, Sarah. Mm-hmm. For a third time, basically, in clip 8.
And there's something I want to say.
Before you say it, I just want to tell you that I'm sorry.
Kelly, listen to me.
Last night, you were trying to be honest with me, and I reacted terribly.
Will you just hold on 1 second,
but
listen to me?
What's worse yet is that I didn't make you feel safe enough to come and tell me the truth in the first place.
It is not your fault.
You are the most honest person I know. And if you're not comfortable being open with me, then I must be doing something wrong.
You are not doing anything wrong.
No, I'm serious.
You are.
I can be harsh and judgmental and a little bit of a bitch sometimes.
Are you finished?
Yes. But I just need to know one thing. What are you doing with me?
It's a wonder.
Yep.
You wanted to tell me something?
Yeah, I called the insurance company and they said they're going to pay to fix the car.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now we can officially put this whole thing behind us. Your trip to the desert and everything that's happened since. How'd that sound?
I think that sounds great.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, there's still many more episodes of Matt's guilt to get through, sadly.
Yay.
And there's still more of this episode to get through, but first we have a message for a different Matt.
Melissa has let us know that on October 11th, she will be marrying Matt, the love of her life. Or, to put it in terms our listeners would understand, he's mad, bad, and dangerous to know, and she's not being a bitch about it.
Nice. They listen to this podcast every time they're in the car together, so Melissa, we hope you've gotten Matt comfortably seated, with or without seasonal seat warmers, we don't know your life, to listen to our list of 5 reasons your marriage will be better than any of the ones on the show.
Number 1, neither of you is going to push the other into the arms of a sexy photojournalist by being so absentee, Jim.
Number 2, we assume Matt doesn't plan to get Melissa's sister pregnant and then lie about it for 20 plus years, and if he does, maybe he should rethink that.
Number 3, while in-law trouble is very common, we assume Melissa's dad isn't going to put out a hit on Matt after the wedding that accidentally kills Melissa instead. But just in case, heads on a swivel, you two.
Number 4, just don't do anything like Mel and Jackie, either time.
And number 5, neither of you intends to mess around with a new partner if and when the other undergoes a long-term hospitalization, unlike another Matt we might mention.
On behalf of all of us,
best wishes on your wedding, Matt and Melissa!
And now, our A-plot. Camille's trying to get into e-commerce and everyone's pissed off about it. That dumb funk loop is playing on the Muzak when David comes into the store. That's the one!
Oh, God.
I forgot you had that, Dave. They've barely started mildly flirting, Donna and David, that is, when Camille comes in with some wool that Donna ordered online. David asks if she orders a lot of stuff off the internet. Oh, the past.
What are you trying to say, David?
Cut to me buying something from an Instagram ad on my phone in bed, like every other
again. Yeah, same.
Anyway, Camille says she does, and that she saves a fortune on sales tax doing so. Again, the past. Camille urges Donna to tell David the news, which is Donna is thinking about starting a website for the store, DonnaMartinOriginals.com, which I looked it up. There actually is something parked there. It's just a list of links. I can't tell if it's algorithmically generated, but if it is, it knows I'm into ladies' shoes, Puma ladies' shoes, ladies' sneakers, ladies, and of course, electric bike scooter. David says he knows a great web designer. While David writes down the guy's contact info, Camille snuggles up to him possessively. And as soon as Camille leaves, David sells her out in clip 9.
So you two are good?
Yeah, you know.
Well, when you stop coming by.
I didn't stop coming by, Donna. I've just been trying to keep a respectful distance.
From what?
Well, Camille's still a little weird about us.
You know that's ridiculous.
That's what I keep telling her, but for some reason she doesn't believe me.
Oh my God. The Charlie Brown puss on David, this whole episode, like he's just an Eeyore about everything and still is not wearing makeup. Like he just looks so blotchy and the hair.
Yeah, I can't.
You know, in Jackass 2, when they made him the beard out of pubes?
Of course.
It's David's hair right now.
I wish I was watching that right now.
Same, and I fucking hated that movie. It was miserable every second I was in the theater. I'm still mad at you for that. Anyway, moving on.
Sorry. The next day, David's web designer friend Mitch teaches Camille and Donna and all of us about the magic of online retail. Clip 10.
It's simple. People log on the internet, view your stuff, point and click.
Like catalog shopping.
Yeah, but much more personalized. Say someone orders a dress. Anytime they log on again, they get sales information on that particular line.
You can track that?
If someone logs on 3 times but doesn't order anything, they automatically get a sales incentive when they log on again.
Oh, that sounds great once they log on, but everyone sells their stuff on the internet. How are people supposed to find us?
They can search for you on their own, or you can advertise.
How expensive is that?
It varies. I mean, you could spend $35,000 a month or a banner ad on a good search engine.
Or
as little as $1,500 a month for space on a smaller website. And the more you pay, the more hits you are guaranteed.
Oh, is that how it works? Neat. Banner ads.
The past. In the visual aids, you can see the mock-up of how the store would look, the front end on Donna Martin Originals.
Boy.
It is adorable. Anyway, Donna points out that if they're going to invest in advertising, they will also need to pay to stock the items they put on the website or else risk pissing off customers who don't get their orders fulfilled for weeks. Camille thinks they won't have to have stock until things are ordered. I mean, they're kind of both right. Like, inventory control is a thing that exists, but whatever.
Yeah. You can also do that on your personal computing device.
You can.
Intuit.
But we know that Donna is fearful in general, so of course she is here, worrying that opening an online store is too speculative. But Camille is condescending about Donna's concerns and tells her to use other people's money to pay for this initiative, as though Donna hasn't already probably run through every person she knows who has money. Except one, Camille finds Dylan at the club to try to get him to invest in an internet company she's thinking of starting. He sends her up to his office to talk, but we don't see the meeting. Instead, the next time we check in on this plot line, David is coming into the store to harangue Donna about her thoughts on Mitch. She is polite, but of course we already know what she thought. Donna's fine turning a profit in the traditional retail space and doesn't seem to care that David thinks she's in the Stone Age. David complains that Camille is so much better at pitching the online store than he is. Donna says she went out for lunch 4 hours ago. And oh, look, here she is now with Dylan, who says he's going to invest in the website. He loved Camille's pitch. Donna reiterates that she's not comfortable with people investing in this venture. Dylan pulls her aside to trade on her old crush on him by saying he'll take her out to dinner just to talk about it. And she agrees. And on the other side of the store, Donna asks if he and Camille weren't supposed to have lunch today, and she apologizes for forgetting, but isn't this exciting? And he pretends to think it is, but glares. And it turns out it's not dinner, it's drinks at the bar at his hotel. Camille and Mitch are also present, and so is David for no reason.
Why?
This made me so mad.
Oh my God, me too. And then when he does talk, like, shut the fuck up. Why are you even here?
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't a social engagement. You have no stake in the store. Fuck off.
No. Yeah, go play darts with your face.
So now he is bearish on the idea, which Camille calls him on. He sees more reasons to be cautious, he says, and it's a big decision to make, and it's for Donna to make, not him. Dylan tells Donna that if he were her, he would probably do it. And so Mitch and Donna are left alone, and we see she's starting to soften, given how persuasive Mitch is. And can he persuade her to have dinner with him tomorrow? Outside the bar, Camille and David are fighting. He's being pissy because she went to Dylan for the money, she thinks. But he says it's that Camille went to anyone for the money after Donna asked her not to. Camille points out that she owns a small piece of the store and deserves some stay, but some say... But David doesn't think her share is enough to justify her overstepping like this. And then Camille is pissed that David is siding with Donna over Camille again. But then Dylan says Donna's thinking about it and Camille doesn't know how to feel. The next morning, Kelly questions Donna about her choice to go out with a friend of the guy that she's actually in love with. Donna's not that optimistic about things working out with Mitch, but David's unavailable and she's not ready to tell him how she feels and blah, blah. We all know this. So then Donna opens the door and Camille is there to apologize for going behind Donna's back. Donna agrees that she was wrong to go to Dylan, but now Donna's actually glad Camille did it because she's going to take Dylan up on his offer. And Camille hopes that means their friendship is secure because that means more to her than all the money they're about to make. Yeah, right. But Donna assures her they're okay and they hug. So Donna has brought Mitch to the club during David's terrible show. And you guessed it, it's time to learn more facts about the internet. Clip 11.
David's next, you know.
Next for what?
Getting on the internet.
Do you ever stop?
Hey, the web grows by more than 100 radio stations every month. Already you can listen to a Brazilian Top 40 station or international news directly from China. Well, why not David Silver live from the After Dark?
Not a bad idea. So what's it like to be a true believer?
It's great. Especially when you have so much to believe in.
Not with the Cleavern that you can see with visual aids.
It's bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, the internet, nowhere to go but up forever. As we all know, that's what happened.
Uh-huh. Also, David, live from the After Dark. Like, it's bad enough that he's there at all. Don't, like, leave the internet out of it. It doesn't deserve this.
Oh, so true. So then David runs into Dylan by the can and makes a veiled threat about all the time Camille is now spending with Dylan working on this new venture. And Dylan's like, what? And the next day at the store, Team Internet gathers to drink champagne and celebrate the site going online. I guess that was fast. David is still upset about Donna getting pressured into launching the site. But Donna now thinks she needed the pressure from Camille, who, and also a great fix up with Mitch. Clip 12.
Yeah. You two could be good together.
Kind of like you and Camille.
I'd aim higher if I were you.
Why, what's wrong?
She's the one who pressured you.
Look, I don't want to be the reason you guys aren't getting along.
You're a reason. Believe me, there's a few.
Is one of them that you're not properly medicated? Like, he seriously is Linus with his dirty blankying around the store in the scene like crazy. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Just break up with her and stop fucking throwing her under the Donna bus every time Donna simperingly asks about it. You're both terrible. Just get back together already so you can stop getting your shit all over everybody else.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm this mad about it. Who cares?
I know, it's just, but it is infuriating that he's, you know, being like this. Like, talk to Camille about this if you have a problem instead of darkly hinting around behind her back to her business partner. Like, none of this is cool.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I actually like Camille, and they're really trying to make her seem like a striver. And it's like, she is great. You don't deserve her. We don't deserve her. Yes, her phone is dumb. It's not her fault.
God, the phone. So true. Yeah. She is the one that's having ideas about the store and trying to make it better. And, like, you know, every time she does that, they try to make it out like she's some kind of conniver. Like, no, Kelly was actually dropping the ball doing their PR campaign. Like, nothing Camille has done is wrong, really.
Yeah.
Whatever. Dylan enters and yells for Donna and David 6 feet away to come and have champagne, and they all toast their foolproof online business plan, and David is jealous both of Mitch chastely kissing Donna on the cheek and Dylan for hugging Camille, for being the prime mover and huskily whispering, "Make me a rich man," in her ear. So later, Camille's sitting up in bed with a magazine in David's room when he goes by. He's going to read, but he wants to do it in the living room. Camille does a great eye roll, which you can see in the visual aids. Justly annoyed, she goes out to confront him about what he's actually mad about, because she thought her going behind Donna's back worked out for the best. And now David says that was never what he was mad about in the first place. Bitch, that's what you told her. What is she supposed to think? But it's actually about Dylan. Clip 13.
Camille, I was never even upset with you. It's just Dylan.
What did Dylan do?
Same thing he always does. He hovers. He makes himself available. He acts mysteriously nocturnal.
Dylan and me, is that what you're talking about? David, I don't deserve this.
I'm not saying you do. I'm just telling you how I feel.
You know what? Considering the way you expect me to just simply accept whatever it is you and Donna either have or don't have going on, the idea that you would say anything about the non-existent relationship I have with Dylan is unbelievable.
You don't understand the history I have with him.
I don't care what it is. Dylan's my friend. And if this business works out, we're going to be spending more and more time together.
What if it bothers me?
There's no reason why it should.
What if it does?
That's your problem, David, not ours.
Fucking Camille. A, Camille. Yeah. And he's just being so performatively sad. And he's like, Dylan takes everything from me. Like, maybe the problem is that you are a butt.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm pretty sure that is the problem. You yeah. are a butt.
If Val was more interested in Dylan than she was in you, and
Gina.
Oh my God. I forgot her name. She was the end of the show like three Aww. Episodes ago. Gina. Yeah, that's maybe partly on you if you're less interesting than Dylan. And maybe Camille should just dump David and go see if Dylan is interested in going out with her, because maybe that would work.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where we leave things this week until we name our episode MVP. Camille. She did something good for the store.
Yeah. And she told David how some shit is. It won't work, but she did it. And I'm proud of her. And yeah. she continues not to have a single pore. This actor's skin is just amazing.
It's insane.
She's lovely.
Yep. Least valuable player. I mean, I hate to say it because it's such a nothing storyline, but Steve, everything you did with that bunny is not okay.
Yeah. I'm going to say Kelly. The one time you would be justified in being a bitch about it and you ask no follow-up questions. Kay.
Yeah, when a man is like mincing around clearly guilty about something, like shut up and let him tell you. Anyway, time for the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. It's bad to drink champagne when you're in recovery every time.
Yeah. It's dangerous to invest in internet banner ad schemes when you don't really know what you're talking about because nobody did. Back then.
It's bad to invest in Donna's store. Like, how has he even hung on this long? We assume she's getting infusions of cash from her estate, right? We all do.
Yeah, I guess it did. They did say they were turning a profit, but snort. It's bad to not, like, just pick a, if you're going to be in the middle of this Matt Kelly acid shit, pick a lane.
And you said it already. It's dangerous to open your hotel room door to just anybody. Use the people. Stay away from Kelly. That makes 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Next time on Again With This, Melrose Place Edition, Keelison continues, despite Allison's misgivings. Matt gets gay-bashed, fired, and embroiled in a lawsuit. And Sandy puts all those accents in a bandana, ties it to a stick, and heads east for her big break. Bye, girl. Our visual aids might break your rods and cones, but they are available for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com or on our Twitter account at AWT90210. Or you could join our complex at our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm star of The Hopping Dead, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Too soon, probably. My co-host is Guaranteed Hit, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Internet Revolutionary, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.